Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Studs, let's talk Bears Packers. Lost in all of the joy over the Bears beating the Rams, it's Packer Week. Well, I guess now we can kind of turn the page to the fact that it's Packer Week. And since we, on our show in particular, we actually have someone entrenched in what's going on in Green Bay because our guy Jim Ozarski, to his own admission, is a stan of this show. And we appreciate the fact that he is a stan of this show because when it comes to Bears Packers, he's the authority now covering them for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he joins me now here on The Score. What's up, sir?
Oh, not much. I thought I left bad football in Cincinnati, Lawrence, and then I've come to Green Bay, and go figure, right?
It seems to be following you around the country.
It is. It's look, I didn't think I'd cover a Mike McCarthy being fired before Marvin Lewis. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, that was the shocker of a move, you know, a little over a week ago. And, you know, they're feeling good, as they would be, beating Atlanta. But it's not a great team that's going into Soldier Field Sunday.
No, but they did play well. They played really well. And that's what's I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about the firing of Mike McCarthy first. When did you start to get word that it was a possibility that it would happen?
Well, it started flipping a bit for him in the really brutal sort of road trip middle of the season where they went from Los Angeles to New England, home against Miami, to Seattle, to Minnesota. I mean, that is, you know, that's crisscrossing the country 4 out of 5 weeks on the road. They only won one of those, and that was at home against Miami. And there was a little momentum in terms of this offense isn't working. You know, Aaron Rodgers, for whatever reason, is disconnected with the offense. His numbers look great on paper, but if you were to watch him snap in and snap out, it's clearly not the same guy. So it was kind of there. It was kind of in the water a little bit. And I think Mark Murphy wanted to give Mike McCarthy the chance to do the run the table, to win it out, if you will, and finish 9-6-1 and make the playoffs. And then that effort against the Cardinals 2 weeks ago, losing at Lambeau Field to one of the worst teams in the league, Mark Murphy said it. He's like, that was it. He's like, I watched that game, and that told me it had to be done now. So I think it was building, Lawrence, because they just couldn't get over themselves. There was just whatever it was, and no one could quite put a finger on it. But so it was a slow build, I guess, through the year.
Yeah, and I know that, look, you were in Cincinnati covering the Bengals for a majority of this relationship. But is there any inkling at all on why, with two guys who were successful together, maybe not as successful as they should have been, that they couldn't figure out a way to make it work?
Yeah, I think it was just at some point, you know, the firebrand coach of Mike McCarthy came in. Let's not forget, he came in to coach a 37-year-old Brett Favre. You know, Favre was supposedly on the decline and had run Mike Sherman out of town by being the veteran guy and kind of running things, and they needed the young coordinator to rein him in, and it worked. And then obviously he stood by Aaron Rodgers during that whole transition. And I think just over time, Rodgers, at whatever point, whether he just didn't feel challenged by the offense anymore, whether Mike McCarthy didn't challenge him anymore, and there were some thoughts about that. Associate head coach Winston Moss, you know, tweets out, hey, hold 12 accountable, and then Winston Moss gets fired. I think it was just one of those, the time had come. It sounds generic. I really don't Yeah, I don't really think there's any personal issue. I think it was more a real professional disconnect between a quarterback who, frankly, just, I think, wanted something new.
Well, you're kind of fresh eyes up there, and we're talking with Jim Ozarski, who covers the Packers for the Journal Sentinel. What's dealing with Aaron Rodgers like?
He's interesting in that he pays attention to everything. He watches everything when he walks through the locker room. He's, you know, the head's always up, eyes are up. He's aware of who's in there, and, you know, he reads everything, and he's smart. And, you know, he'll suffer some poor questions, if you will. He'll kind of be funny and give – not quite like Jay Cutler. You know, he's not going to roll his eyes and sigh at you. He'll answer the question, but he says it. I want to be challenged. I want, whether it be us in the media with good questions, whether it be football-wise or otherwise. And I think as a player, it's the same way. I think he's a guy who wants someone to make him elevate himself. And I think, at least to this point this year, it really – that hasn't happened.
What has been the biggest problem, from your estimation, with the Packers' offense?
Yeah, the offensive line isn't great, but honestly, it's situational football. You know, for whatever reason, on third down, they are horrific. I mean, Sunday was their best effort, but I think up until then, they were near the bottom of the league, 33-34%. Conversion rate on third down, just too many three and outs. And then in the red zone, again, one of the worst teams in the league and actually converting touchdowns. And oddly, you know, you talk about the quarterback they have, a guy like Devontae Adams, double-digit touchdowns. Jimmy Graham, you know, at least a name, you would think a weapon in those areas. And it's been a myriad of issues. They've given up 22 third down sacks, some on the quarterback, some on the line, you know, a lot of just penalties that knocked them out of field goal or, you know, touchdown range, I guess, and as they have settled for field goals. So their situational football has been really, really poor all season.
Talking with Jim Ozarski of the Journal Sentinel, he is our eyes and ears behind enemy lines, put that in air quotes, as the Bears get ready to take on the Packers this Sunday. Okay, so you move up to Green Bay, you're covering them. Meanwhile, your hometown team, the Chicago Bears, went out and got themselves good. What's that like to watch from up there?
Yeah, it's interesting, and there's a really interesting tie between these two organizations this offseason, Lawrence, because it's, you know, you hire Matt Nagy, okay, but who did the Bears beat out for Khalil Mack? It was the Packers. The Packers signed Kyle Fuller to a contract, to an offer sheet, and lo and behold, I remember those conversations. Are the Bears crazy for matching that offer? And now Kyle Fuller has seven interceptions and an eighth way back in week one. I'm sure he still wishes he held on to from Aaron Rodgers. And then, you know, look, Vic Fangio at one point, you know, Mike McCarthy wanted to bring him up to Green Bay, you know, when John Fox was fired. And that obviously was an emphasis for Matt Nagy and the Bears front office. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, there's rivalries and all that on the field stuff. But, and lest I forget, the Packers were also in on Allen Robinson.
That's right.
You know, in free agency. So, I mean, you look at that, the Bears won the off season in that way in terms of their rival up north. And I mean, look, if Khalil Mack and Allen Robinson were in Green Bay, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that the records are in verse this weekend. I mean, those two guys, what they've done for the Bears and what they could have done and what's lacking for the Packers, I mean, it's kind of it's really interesting going into this week how the Chicago offseason really negatively affected Green Bay's regular season.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see this week. Now, I want to talk about the game against Atlanta because it felt like Aaron Rodgers was calling his own game out there. And I know that he has Philbin back there who threw out challenge flags just indiscriminately at the beginning of the game yesterday. Was that Aaron Rodgers taking control of the offense, or was that Atlanta's defense being awful?
Yeah, that's Atlanta's. It was more Atlanta's defense being awful, Lawrence, to be honest. 8 accepted penalties on defense. I believe Atlanta had 11, maybe. You know, a few that were declined, or there was multiple penalties. Atlanta was way more interested in doing things illegally than stopping Rodgers. What Philbin did, though, to help Rodgers was, and this was a little bit of a change for Mike McCarthy, three-step drops, quick passes. There were some slants that, frankly, the Packers just haven't done much of in 2018 to get him in an early rhythm. You know, and he kind of looked the way he has all year, to be honest. There's some missed throws, some missed opportunities, and some absolutely beautiful throws. The touchdown to Randall Cobb, you know, that football right through the ear, you know, by the ear hole of the Atlanta linebacker. Not very many guys can make. So, no, it was Joe Philbin really calling the Packers offense, but trying to get Rodgers going early, as opposed to, frankly, early in the year, they'd get off schedule. There'd be a sack, there'd be a penalty, and all of a sudden it's third and long, and Rodgers is running around trying to make a big play downfield.
So when you're looking at the matchup between the two teams as we get closer to the game, what should the Bears fear, if anything?
Well, I guess, that's hard to say. I guess it would be, you know, Mitchell Trubisky, you know, still turning the ball over. Look, you know, I know it was week one, but the Packers did, you know, they confused him. And Mike Pettine is very good at scheming up, whether it be younger quarterbacks, and Mitchell still fits that mold, or a Matt Nagy-type offense. I mean, look, the Packers forced the Rams to punt 5 straight times in L.A., only held them to 8 points in the first half before Sean McVay found out the Packers couldn't cover Todd Gurley. But other than that, it was – I mean, Green Bay kind of had that blueprint for how to take away Jared Goff's first reads, how to pressure him. And let's be honest, if Mitchell Trubisky's first read is taken away, you know, he will give a defense an opportunity to get the ball. Offensively, I guess the fear would be that intangible that is Aaron Rodgers, and especially at Soldier Field. Well, he's 14-3 against the Bears in his career. For whatever reason, that guy, when it comes to the Chicago, doesn't matter who the coordinator is, doesn't matter which Hall of Famer is on defense for the Bears or future Hall of Famer, for whatever reason, he plays at a level even beyond what he normally does elsewhere. And that includes week one. I mean, say what you want. I mean, that's still the fourth best scoring output that this Bears defense has allowed all year, and that was in 2 quarters of play. So, you know, with Rodgers essentially that second half. So they're not good, Lawrence. I mean, the Packers, if they fear anything, it's Mitchell Trubisky turning the ball over and the Packers sort of grinding out a, you know, a 17-10, 20-17 kind of low scoring game, because they don't score very much. And they need turnovers to help them do that. And that'd be the only thing I think that would prevent the Bears from winning Sunday.
I was going through the scenarios, and there's a way for the Packers to get into the playoffs. I actually don't think it's that crazy for them to get into the playoffs. Are they even talking about that?
Rodgers brought it up a little bit in his post-game press conference Sunday. You're right. There's some math out there, where a bunch of other teams have to lose, of course, and the Packers, for them, have to win out. That's the one thing they have to do. I think, it's in the water a little bit. I think their focus is more on, obviously, what Chicago has done in taking over this division and how good Vic Fangio's group has been since that second half in week one. And I think they're just sort of putting all their eggs in that sort of rivalry basket. You're right. So much other things have to happen on the scoreboard for them to matter, December 30th. So I think they're really just kind of hanging on to, hey, the Bears are playing for something. We can wreck that. And, oh, by the way, it could still maybe help us at the end of the year.
Okay. I've heard a lot of people discuss Rodgers' year. And I know that this is one of those things where I may qualify as out-of-town stupid. And I'm okay with being out-of-town stupid. You're talking about a quarterback with a touchdown interception ratio, which is 23-1. A quarterback with a rating that's 100. Why are so many people upset with what Aaron Rodgers is doing this year, considering, and I get it, like he's been the best quarterback in the league in the regular season. That is a statistical fact throughout his career. But why in a year where you see 23-1 and 100 passer rating for him, are people going, oh, well, maybe it wasn't McCarthy. Maybe it was Aaron.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lawrence, because when a guy sets the bar that high, when he doesn't hit that level, you notice it. And the only frame of reference I could give is, you know, late Jordan era and those sort of off nights and that last run where you're like, wow, you know, Michael is 35. You know, yes, on paper it looks great. But he has, and deservedly, gotten criticism because, frankly, Lawrence, if he had been playing all year like the MVP, I think the Packers are at least 7-4 going into this game, 8-3. What, you know, he's missed some really easy throws. I'm not talking about, you know, the crazy throws that Aaron Rodgers can only make and he was off. I mean, wide open, 3rd-and-2, throw it in the dirt, and now they got a punt and Seattle wins. In Minnesota, Devontae Adams is wide open. And when I say wide open, I mean like 4 steps wide open, like college open. And Aaron Rodgers throws it out of the back of the end zone. And now, you know, they settle for a field goal. Minnesota wins the game. I mean, go to Detroit. He fumbles away 2-3 times in his own end. Detroit gets some easy scores. They lose by, you know, one possession. It's been plays like that, throws like that that he's missed, if you just do the easy thing, you know, especially for that guy, the record is inverse. So that's why you hear it. It's on paper, 60 minutes, it looks good, but that snap-to-snap stuff, it hasn't been that consistent all year.
Jim, I appreciate the time, man. I love that you still check in on this show and what's going on the score and everything while you're up in Green Bay. Good luck to you for the rest of it, because I do think if they don't make the playoffs and the Bears can put a nail in that on Sunday, it will make for a really interesting offseason for you to cover. Wait, before I let you go, who are some names that Packers fans should be thinking about when it comes to the head coach search? Does Joe Philbin have a chance?
Maybe, kind of, sort of. I mean, I think they'd have to win out and you know, get that help and make a run to the Super Bowl and make it really difficult. I think Northwestern's own Mark Murphy, president and CEO, is going to do a big search. I think Wildcats fans need to be ready to hear Pat Fitzgerald perhaps being interviewed. Murphy was the one who hired Fitz. Bears fans, Vic Fangio. I think he should be on that list.
I agree.
Right. So in terms of your listeners in town, those are two names to pay attention to. After that, it's kind of your usual suspects. I think they're going to cast a wide net. From, I'm not sure about Josh McDaniels. I don't know if that stink from Indianapolis is totally lifted off that guy yet. But I think, you know, coordinators and you know, I think Matt Nagy might open the door for guys like an Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City, or guys like Nagy who only had that year of play calling or quasi play calling. Matt Nagy might have broken down some doors for coaches, you know, that have his sort of resume around the league.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, Lawrence. Thank you.
That's Jim Ozarski, who covers the Packers for the Journal Sentinel. He's a local man. I know that all the Ozarskis are listening to me right now as I butcher the last name. I've been trying for years. I think I got it. It's like, oh, and then czar, like a czar in there. And then the ski, so Ozarski. But that's our guy. We love him. We love that he's on the show. More Bears breakdown, and we'll take a look at that Packers game next here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
In a couple of minutes, we're going to talk with Dave Lato, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons. This hour being brought to you by Grandview Homes. Grandview will buy your home today. Go to grandviewhomes.com.
Chicagowolves.com. And the bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Give the gift of live sports this season with the Chicago Wolves Howliday Pack. Each pack includes tickets to the game of your choice, merchandise, food, and free parking, all at one low price. Visit the Chicagowolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. Before I get to Dave Lado, I just wanted to read you this, because you may, since we were talking about the Packers in the last segment, Aaron Rodgers was talking about how they're confident that they can make it to the playoffs. And one of the reasons that they're confident is because of how well he's played in Chicago. He's like, yeah, you know, we'll play Chicago. We do well down there. He has. He's won 14 games here. From the scores account, Akeem Hicks told the boys that he and his teammates didn't forget Aaron Rodgers mentioning weeks back that the Packers have confidence to win out, in part because of their success at Soldier Field. Quote, I'm really excited for Aaron to come here and play this game. Close quote. That's from Akeem Hicks. Okay, let's talk a little DePaul basketball. Studs, hit the music. No? No music? No fight song? Man. There it is. Yeah. Gotta have a fight song. Every week we talk with Dave Lado, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons. If you would like to talk with Dave and you have a question about previous games or upcoming games, 312-644-6767 is the number that you can call. You can also throw a text our way, 670-11. The Blue Demons coming off a heartbreaker at Northwestern. I was in attendance for that game. I was real puffy chested for a very long time in that game until late in the second half. DePaul's head coach now joining us here on The Score. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Lawrence. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I will say, I was in Evanston on Saturday, and I had like all my DePaul gear on, and I was screaming and yelling and cheering. And then like bad stuff started happening in the second half where Northwestern goes on a 25-0 run, and they come back and they win the game. Before we get to what happened at the end, I'd like to know how your team got out to the big lead against Northwestern and what things can be learned from that.
Yeah, I've rehashed it a bunch of times, obviously, and if you talk to me tonight being Tuesday night, if you talk to me Sunday night or Saturday night, you wouldn't get the same person you're talking to right now, obviously. But I think my staff did a phenomenal job in our preparation, and I think what we had talked about was in some of the previous games we had gotten off to a slow start. Early morning games can tend to do that to you. So we wanted to make sure that we, you know, put our guys in a better position and see what would happen if we, you know, just revamp some things a little bit. There wasn't a whole lot of changes that you can do, you know, on a Saturday morning very early, but things on Friday or Thursday and our preparation and Saturday morning to make sure that they have an opportunity to put their best foot forward. So I thought we did that and some of the things and our guys were really prepared. And so, the atmosphere, you know, we talked about being here 2 years ago and what that meant in the first half when they were up, you know, by over 30 points. And so I thought their mindset and attention to detail and sticking to one, the things that we try to do well every day. And then two, as it relates to Northwestern, was extremely, precise and they followed a game plan, damn near to a T in all aspects. And I think that was a large reason why we got off to a good start and we stayed that way throughout most of the game.
Femi Olajobi, I thought, played great. He looked very comfortable in the post, finished with 22. Devin Gage had 17 points, was attacking the basket and doing great stuff. Those two guys combined for 16 of 26 from the field. The rest of the guys struggled shooting the basketball, particularly Max. Had a rough day, 3 of 13 for him and 2 of 11 from outside the arc. What was going on? Was it something that they were doing, or was it a sight line issue or just a bad day for Max?
No, and I think there's a combination of things. One, you know, he obviously plays a starring role within what we do on a day-to-day basis. He hadn't practiced and wasn't sure anybody, him or trainer or the doctors or me, whether he would even suit up and play. So I could easily say, you know, he didn't have the kind of game rhythm through practice. that you have to have. But, you know, I don't want to say that as an excuse or anything like that. But if you do that, I think what Northwestern did was a tremendous job in trying to deny him the ball. So a lot of times he was used as a decoy, put him in screening situations, knowing they weren't going to switch. And it allowed Devin to get downhill, you know, a lot of times. And he was benefactor of what normally would go to Max. But then, you know, again, just not having the kind of rhythm that he would normally expect to have, both physically and psychologically, lend itself to not shooting the ball well. And you know, as long as you've been around basketball long enough to know, if you're just off by one small bit, the difference between a ball swishing through the net and hitting the front rim is so minuscule, and you have to have everything working. And so, you know, he and a couple of other guys didn't and hadn't been shooting the ball as well as they normally do, and obviously, when you're playing in somebody else's arena and somebody who has the kind of potential Northwestern has, it can cost you.
So what happened in the run that Northwestern went on where mm-hmm. it looked like you guys were in control of the game, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. there was just this avalanche of points from them? Mm-hmm. What happened that allowed that to take place?
Well, if you look at, you know, again, going into the game, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses? They you know, obviously, Law is a tremendous player for them, and he had been playing very well. The other perimeter players were just kind of finding themselves. They were good shooters, good players, a little streaky. Pardon, on the other hand, was a very tough cover because he could score and had been, you know, averaged 25 points in the first two Big Ten games that he had previous to ours. So it became a little problematic as to how you're going to orchestrate a defense to cover all your bases. I thought our game plan was on point. We, you know, talked about how we're going to guard screens, not just on the ball, but off the ball, and making sure we go over them and making sure we communicate. And, you know, how do you handle a post player like Pardon? And, you know, you don't want to leave him alone because he can score at a tremendous rate. And he's the career leader in field goal percentage at Northwestern, so you can't just guard him one-on-one. But if you put a help defender, a second defender, he's a really good pass and pass it out. So I thought our game plan when all those things going on was really good, mainly because we played with a ton of communication, a ton of energy, and attention to detail. During that run, we lost our way, you know, for a lot of different reasons. We might have been a little fatigued, or, you know, they gained some momentum through tough shots that they hit initially, but then open shots after that. Then when you come down, and the first wave, I thought, you know, we made it through. We got to a 57-50 lead after they cut it to a little while. But then when you're not having success on the offensive end, too, and this is the thing I think really matters more than anything, Lawrence, is that we're still learning how to handle ourselves both through adversity, which is critical, but through success as well. And good teams don't have to figure themselves out nearly as much as teams that are trying to be what we're trying to be. And those become real critical to your growth. And so when you assess it and you look at it and you try to figure out, as you asked me, the reasons why, I could point to a million different things from a basketball standpoint, but psychologically, just taking that next step to understand you've got to not only take a team's best hit, but when you're up 15 on somebody else's court, you've got to understand how you enjoy that success and how you make it continue over the course of 40 minutes.
So obviously as a fan, I'm freaking out while this is going on. Like I'm losing my mind. And it wasn't until later on that I was sitting there thinking, well, what was going on in Dave's mind? So I'm curious, when something like that happens, what are the things that are, what types of remedies are you trying to figure out as it's going on?
Well, I would tell you most every coach, less a very few, would want to have about 18 timeouts because you want to now coach every play. And let's just backtrack to practice. If something was going on in the middle of practice where you don't have the kind of energy, or you're not doing things well, or you stop doing things well, you have the whistle so you can stop it. You can pinpoint certain things. And that's kind of what you want to do in that moment in a game. Obviously, you can't. So there's almost sometimes a little bit of a helpless feeling because you can see it right in front of you. You can see your team wavering. You can see that they need something that you think as a coach you can provide, but you can't walk on the court every possession and call a timeout. So you try to design a play that you think could get an easy basket, something going to the hole. Boom, you try to do that. Oh, goodness gracious, there's a turnover. And those kind of things. So it's a little bit helpless sometimes from your standpoint. You try to manage the moment. I didn't want to, as a coach, panic because there was still a lot of time left, and we cut it down to three late, so we still had an opportunity. But it is a little bit of a standing there, and every coach will tell you, we've all been there, that it can be a little bit of a helpless feeling when the game starts to lose the kind of control that you want to have.
The next two games continue the local rivalry games, and these games will be at Wintrust. Chicago State comes in tomorrow night. Tip-off is going to be at 7. We'll have pregame starting at 6:45 here on The Score. And then UIC game. That game will be Friday night, and we'll have that game on The Score as well. Dave, we're going to take a timeout. I want to talk about those two games. I want to talk about the finishing off non-conference schedule. We'll do that with Dave Lato. One more segment here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spending a few more minutes with the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons, Dave Lato, joining me here on The Score as DePaul gets ready for some local games this week. Tomorrow on The Score, starting at 7 o'clock, it will be DePaul taking on Chicago State at Wintrust Arena. And then on Friday, DePaul playing UIC. I'm trying to think of the... I mean, I know, Dave, with Wintrust Arena, it allows you some things that we don't ordinarily see when it comes to scheduling and being able to play some games, but I kind of love the idea of a Friday night game and a Friday night home game. I love that. So for you, and we'll talk about Chicago State, but being able to play a rivalry game on a Friday night and having it be early enough where if people want to just come straight from work and then head out and go have dinner or whatever, I think that's a cool scheduling quirk to see you and UIC at 6 o'clock Friday night.
Yeah, I think for all the reasons that you talked about is some of the things that we've talked about with having Wintrust where it is in the South Loop and having access to a lot of different things. So as a fan, just imagine it. You know, some buddies that work downtown and they meet and have a cocktail, go over to the game, you know, have dinner afterwards or before and just make it a night out on a Friday night where maybe not a whole lot of other things going on. You know, it doesn't get in the way of weekend where there's so many things to do, whether it's family related or other sports things or soccer or those kind of things or Sunday football, particularly, you know, the way the Bears are performing right now. So it gives us another opportunity to allow fans, not just DePaul fans, but sports fans in general, to come to the Wintrust Arena and see, as you said, a local rivalry. And you know the emotion that goes into any game that we play against local opponents. And so it's part of what we talked about, you know, as we thought about what this building could do to our community.
Chicago State's new. I mean, they're doing different things now, different coaching, different AAD there. So from what you've seen of them so far, what do they look like?
Well, I think they're different in a very positive way. You know, obviously when you start a program, there's so many hills that you got to climb and you got to do it one at a time and moment by moment and not to get ahead of yourself. But, you know, record is what it is and schedule that they've got to play is monumental, but you could clearly see it when you watch them on film that they play a lot harder than I remember them playing. They're playing, you know, a lot more together. They've got, you know, some talent that you got to be mindful of. And it's just at the beginning stages. So, you know, I'm sure Lance, who I've known for 25 years, I root like heck for him because he's been through this business, both the highs and especially the lows. He's been through some personal tragedy with his health and he's persevered and he's still standing and he's, you know, living a dream to be able to be a college coach on the Division I level in his home city. So I root like heck for him. And obviously I won't be doing that tomorrow night, but at the same point in time, you know, he's put his fingerprints on a program, and, you know, Chris Zorich, the athletic director, has believed enough in Lance's vision to give him that opportunity and hopefully give him the amount of time and resources that it would take to turn Chicago State around.
Do you remember what it was like when you had that first college head coaching job and all the things that came with it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we started off, again, in 1994. I got my first head coaching job at my alma mater at Northeastern University. And, you know, I'd been at UConn, and we'd been good. And I'm thinking, you know, this, I can do this. This is good. And I think we started off like 0-6 or 0-7. And, you know, it was very hard to kind of get organized and get guys to believe in what you're talking about. And, you know, as a first time head coach, the thing you do most is question yourself. You know, you're very secure in what you've learned, but this is a new atmosphere, and you go from maybe the greatest suggestion maker in the world to have to be a really good decision maker. And that, you know, as you've been warned a million times about moving 18 inches over on that chair and how difficult that transition is. And I'm going through it for the first time and really understanding now that this is not an easy task. And so I sometimes joke and laugh with people, and, you know, basketball is not rocket science. We get that. But if you understand when you turn on a game or you go to a game for those 2 hours, a lot of people have great suggestions as to what you should or should not do. But that represents about 5 to 10% of what we do as coaches. And so it's that other 90% that you got to be really good at. And understand that when it comes to the basketball part of it, you've got to be really secure, but understanding that it's not an easy job at all.
Dave, I appreciate the time. This is a big week in the Holmes household, so I'm going to need you to go 2-0 because my father was a professor for a long time at Chicago State, so I'm going to need you to beat them. My wife has her master's degree from UIC, so I'm going to need you to beat them, or I'm going to be stuck cleaning the bathroom. So I'm going to need you to get 2 wins this week so I can reign supreme in the Holmes household.
You know what? I we've talked about this before with your wife, and so I carry that with me, and now we're going to add your dad to it. So extra added motivation, Lawrence, from you and I and me, especially to you, and how we're going to perform both Wednesday and again on Friday.
I appreciate that. Have a great rest of the week and a good game over at Wintrust tomorrow.
Okay, my man. See you there.
That's Dave Lato, the head coach of the DePaul Blue Demons. If you want to get tickets, go to DePaulBlueDemons.com, or you can call 773-325-SLAM. The top of the hour is being brought to you by Get Covered Illinois. Yeah, you still got time. The December 15th is the deadline to enroll in health insurance on Get Covered Illinois. So go do that. If you don't have insurance and you're like, well, is that still even available? Yes, it's still available till December 15th. So here's what you can do. GetCoveredIllinois.gov or call 1-866-311-1119 to shop for a plan or schedule a free in-person help opportunity. So do that, please. If you're not covered, I want you to be covered. So GetCoveredIllinois.gov is a way that you can do that. I have got 2 pairs of tickets to see Illinois versus Indiana in the Elite Amateur Fight League event at the Aragon Ballroom. That's coming up on Sunday. If you want to go, be caller 6 and 7 to 312-591-6700, and we will hook you all the way up. I want to thank everyone involved with the broadcast tonight. We did a really great job, whether it was promotions or engineering or Lance being here. Herbie actually got to be out the house today. That is not something that we allow, but he said his mom was coming through, so we wanted to make sure we made things look good for him. So shout out to my right-hand man, Herb Lawrence, being out here on the scene with me. And now he has an idea of what I deal with when I do remotes instead of me going, guess what I'll be dealing with when I'm out there doing remotes. So now he understands what I deal with. The top of the hour is also brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Give the gift of live sports this season with the Chicago Wolves Howl-A-Day Pack. That's trademarked by me. Each pack includes tickets to the game of your choice, merchandise, food, and free parking, all at one low price. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES. Thanks to Caliendos for inviting us here. Mike is great. He took great care of us here. We appreciate it. Lance was really happy with the turnout and meeting and seeing all the people. The food here is wonderful, and they're doing great stuff with the hospital. They got the toy drive that's going on for Central DuPage Hospital's Children's Oncology Ward, and that is top-notch. That is a way to rally a community, and I appreciate them involving us in that. Have a great rest of your night. Julie DeCaro is coming up next. I'm going to be listening to her on my way home. Show her the same love that you showed me. I'll see you tomorrow at 6 right here on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.